Hello, this is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First radio show. Today we have some interesting guests. In the first half, we're going to speak to Dr. Jamie Kaufmans, author of Acid Reflux, and also a New York bestseller, Dropping Acid. So we're going to talk about digestion. And in the second half, we have Dr. Wonders, and we're going to talk about exercising during cancer. But first, here's Alan with the Health First news.
Testing for human papillomavirus has become the standard of care in screening for cervical cancer. But now Canadian researchers say it may become unnecessary in women aged 55 and older who have one negative result with the test. The DNA-based HPV test is highly accurate in detecting 14 high-risk strains of the virus that cause the majority of cervical cancers. In the new study, researchers first gained data on more than 200,000 women living in British Columbia. They then created a mathematical model that estimated the lifetime risk of cervical cancer in older women, all of who had not been vaccinated against HPV. The result, just one negative HPV DNA test at the age of 55, suggested that a woman has a very low risk, less than 1%, of cervical cancer, and continued screening with this type of test would provide little benefit, according to the study. The new findings were published November 1st in the Lancet Oncology Journal. An alarming number of American parents save unused antibiotics and give them to family members and other people, a new study finds. This type of misuse helps fuel antibiotic resistance, the study authors said. The report is scheduled for presentation this week in Orlando, Florida, at the National Conference of the American Academy of Pediatrics. Study senior author Dr. Ruth Milanek said this is dangerous not only for those given antibiotics that weren't prescribed for them, but for entire populations of people who some antibiotics may no longer help when the bacteria they target become resistant to them. The researchers conducted an online survey of nearly 500 American parents and found that about 48% said they'd kept leftover antibiotics rather than properly dispose of them. Rats developed cancer after being exposed to high levels of cell phone radiation, but those levels were much higher than what people are exposed to when using their cell phones, a new government report says. When exposed to radio frequency radiation, like that used in 2G and 3G cell phones, male rats developed heart tumors, and there was also evidence of tumors in the brain and adrenal gland. The link between exposure and cancer was less clear in female rats and in male and female mice, according to the November 1st report from the National Toxicology Program at the U.S. National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. And the exposures used in the studies cannot be compared directly to the exposure that humans experience when using a cell phone, NTP senior scientist John Bucher noted in a news release. Long belittled as inconsequential, the appendix is hardly the rock star of body organs, but its reputation may get a boost from new research that suggests that removing it may lower the risk for Parkinson's disease. The finding follows an analysis that examined how appendix removal surgery affected Parkinson's risk among 1.6 million Swedish residents. The study couldn't prove cause and effect, but it found that appendectomy lowered Parkinson's risk by roughly 20%. Study author Vivian Labrie said this is a tissue that most people consider to be a useless organ. It's attached to the large intestine, and it's removed as a very common surgical practice. The new findings suggest, she said, that the appendix may be a tissue site that plays a role in the initiation of Parkinson's disease. The findings were published in the October 31st issue of Science Translational Medicine.
I have Dr. Jamie Kaufman with us today. She's one of the world's leading authorities on the diagnosis and treatment of acid reflux. And she also is the author of Dropping Acid and Dr. Kaufman's Acid Reflux Diet book. So welcome, Jamie.
Hey, Kathy. Thank you for having me on.
It's so good to have you on the show today. So, Jamie, can you tell us a little bit about the causes of acid reflux and what it feels like?
Well, first of all, you know, things have changed. I don't think, you know, we talk about evolution in terms of millennia or thousands, even millions of years. There's also social evolution. So if you go back, and I'm going to get to the answer to your question, but I want to make a point first. When I was young, in the 50s, there was no obesity. There was like the one fat guy. There was no diabetes type 2. There was no heart disease, like everyone had to be on Lipitor. Asthma was rare. Allergies, reflux, esophageal cancer, osteoporosis, sleep apnea. And so all of these diseases have followed the Western diet. And if you take our diet, which, and you know what it is, and we're now dealing with second-generation fast food people. When I grew up, I didn't see my first McDonald's until 1963. Now we have the children of children who grew up eating fast food, and so that the problem is even more acute. So once you come to realize that the diet is the root cause of most of our chronic diseases and the high cost of health care, then you have to ask the question, why is it that doctors don't deal with it? Well, the answer is partly the doctors don't know what reflux is. The gastroenterologists when I was growing up didn't have fancy scopes to look inside people, and there were just a few of them, and they weren't making very much money, and they certainly weren't into it for the money. But in the 70s, these scopes became available, and so the gastroenterologists, at least in this country, in the U.S., hijacked reflux, and they said reflux is heartburn. Heartburn is reflux. It's esophageal, and we own it. The consequences of that is that all the other doctors who deal with the respiratory system became essentially unable to diagnose reflux, because it turns out that most people don't have heartburn. That's called silent reflux. So the symptoms, what do they have? They have symptoms of a cold that doesn't go away, allergies, sinus problems, asthma that's not getting better, problems swallowing, hoarseness, a raspy voice, poor sleep, chronic sore throat, and the medicines don't really make much difference. The proton pump inhibitors may help some people with heartburn, but they don't cure the disease. And so the problem is that respiratory disease is mostly reflux, and it can go unnoticed by people because they sleep right through the reflux events. And it can go unnoticed by physicians. So my call to action is there are symptoms in all of my books. By the way, I've written a series of 4 books for the general public, including one called The Chronic Cough Enigma, and finally the children's book. And every one of those books in my website, which is the Voice Institute of New York, has the reflux symptom index. And it's just 9 questions, and you put some little circles. And if your reflux score on that is 15 or higher, we know that if we were to test you for reflux, your chances of having reflux would be 90%. So this constellation of symptoms, chronic throat clearing, raspy voice, too much mucus, a sensation of a lump in the throat, and then all these respiratory symptoms are usually reflux-related. And that's the big, huge, aha and missing point. And, of course, as I started out saying, it's related to diet.
Okay. So in this, if you feel like you have it, it is a lot of extra mucus. And it in the 9 points, you have hoarseness, clearing the throat, postnasal drip, difficulty swallowing, coughing, breathing difficulties, annoying cough, sensations of a lump in your throat or heartburn, chest pain or indigestion. So those were all the things on the checklist. And so you could, any of those kind of feelings could be not eating the right things, not digesting properly.
That's absolutely correct. And I think the thing that I would like to point out is that there are some real sleepers. Sleeper number one are soft drinks. The reason why the first book, which is, by the way, New York Times bestseller, I might add, Dropping Acid, The Reflux Diet Cookbook and Cure, is we discovered, we couldn't figure out, we started measuring the acidity of things in bottles and cans, and everything pretty much had the same acidity as stomach acid. And it took us the longest time to figure it out. But before the book was published, we found the answer. In 1973, following an outbreak of food poisoning, the Food and Drug Administration mandated that everything in a bottle or a can had to be acidic. And they did that so you wouldn't grow botulism or E. coli and all that. Problem is, the FDA never dreamed that the beverage industry would go to the extremes. And so the amount of acidity of, it's not just carbonated beverages. I mean, it's fruit juices, and energy drinks and pretty much everything except still water is 1,000 times more acidic than it needs to be. So it's a big problem for refluxers. So we recommend, of course, water is the same. You know, coffee and tea and water are the safest things to drink, but not in a bottle. I mean, bottled water is okay, but still water is okay.
Okay, so Jamie, if we have these problems, are going to the doctor and getting drugs going to help any of these?
Nope.
So what are the alternatives? You're an MD. How can we handle this in a way that will increase our ability to digest?
Well, let's talk about it a little bit. First of all, not all drugs are the same. There is one type of medication, and I'm going to be a little bit technical here for a moment. There's a group called H2As. They're safe. They've been around for a very long time. There are three of them available on the market. They're Pepcid, they're Zantac, and they're Tagamet. And they do not cause problems. We even use them in pregnancy, and they're very, very common. There's another group, however, that's become very, very popular. In the United States, 30 million Americans take them at the tune of about $12 billion a year, and these are called proton pump inhibitors. Unfortunately, the proton pump inhibitors cause a lot of problems. It's no surprise that the stomach proton pumps make acid, but what about the proton pumps in your brain and in your heart and in your kidneys? And so we see brain disease and heart disease and increased incidence of esophageal cancer on these drugs. And so we're actually moving to try to remove, these are the purple pills, the Nexium, the Prilosec, the Dexilant, and these pills. So those really shouldn't be sold over the counter. And they shouldn't be taken. So if you have bad reflux, you need to do a little bit of self-analysis. Do you eat breakfast? Is it a good, healthy breakfast, or is it high, high fat? I mean, if you're eating, you know, a bacon and eggs and sausages and toast with a ton of butter and every morning, and then having burgers and fries and a Coke for lunch, and then having something similar, maybe even Mexican food for dinner, and this is your diet day after day, or worse, you don't eat breakfast and lunch, but you come home late, and then you basically keep right on eating till you go to bed, like almost going to a trough. So that there is some analysis to be done in terms of what you eat, what's considered healthy. We recommend 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. We recommend drinking water. We recommend not eating too late. But this sort of this whole question of, you know, why isn't the medical community more attuned has to do with too many specialists, too much reliance on pills and procedures, and this sort of black hole of silent reflux.
Yeah. Dr. Kaufman, we're going to have to go to a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about foods and ways to have healthy digestion and an alkaline diet. So we'll be right back.